So before the break, we were having a little look at thoughts and looking a little bit into their nature. Broadly speaking, maybe you could say there are three kinds of thought. There are thoughts which are nothing to do with me, thoughts which kind of somehow gatecrash the party of me, thoughts that we don't identify with at all. Some of those just don't fit in with our view of what we could possibly think. We couldn't think that. And some of them are just like little bubbles, which it's like if you start to become more absorbed in meditation, you get little bubbles of thought, which are kind of like releases from the Alaya Vijnana, at least that's one way of explaining them, which, yeah, then they don't seem related to us and the general flow of our awareness at all. So you have thoughts like that, which we don't identify with. Then you have thoughts which are my thoughts. And then you have thoughts which are me, where you've become more identified with the thought and kind of carried off on it. And we can kind of watch in meditation how thoughts pop up and we notice them and they come and they go. But we're meditating on the breathing, say, and another thought comes and we're meditating on the breathing, so it comes and it goes. But then another thought comes, which is kind of got a kind of motorcade and sort of lights flashing, and there's a very important thought, you know, which we just, you know, we have to think about. And at that point we kind of, you know, get in the limousine and away we go to wherever it takes us. And one way through that is to really look into the nature of a thought. And what I find if I look into the nature of a thought is that it's actually quite a flimsy thing. Yeah, there are words, there are pictures, there are feelings in the body, there's awareness, there's a kind of movement of energy. That's all I find. Anyone find, like when you were doing that just now, did you find more than that? Was there anything else there?
Memories.
And what was the memory made up of? Was that?
Past experience.
Sorry?
Past experience.
Past experience.
But also what I was getting from my group, as it were.
Mm. Okay. And as that memory was there, you knew that you were having a memory because there were pictures from the past and words about the past. But was it basically made of the same materials as a thought about the present or a thought about the future or a thought about China? Sure. What I'm trying to get at is there's like the kind of basic building blocks of thinking. Yeah. Whether it's about the past, future, whether it's a fantasy, whether it's about me, whether it's not about me. There's what's there. Yeah. If I'm saying that the basic building blocks are words, pictures, feelings, movement of energy, awareness, that's true if I think about China. It's true if I think about the retreat I did here last year. It's true about if I think about what I most deeply long for. So are there any other building blocks or things which are there some of the time which aren't there other times? Nyanagarbha.
There's something I can't quite fit in your picture, which is something like feeling tone, which isn't somatic, but it's something about the hue of the whole experience, which I can't quite fit in your category somehow.
Okay, so there's sort of, depends how I chop up my categories, but we found Vedana. Yeah, we found a feeling, tone, pleasant, unpleasant, neutral. Yeah? Aaron Vera?
There's something, a kind of sense of identification. I'm trying to work out kind of where that fits with the scanners, but there's something like that, kind of.
There's a clinging. So the next stage then would be to look into how we know there's a clinging. What's that made up of? So we're all quite good at clinging. So if we, again, there's, what have I got? I still haven't got anything new.
No, I mean, actually, maybe it's more thoughts and some vagina and not quite sure.
Well, it would be good to really explore, It's like we can try and work it out, but it would be good to really have a go in meditation, working out, clinging is supposed to be the cause of suffering, so what is it? What's it made up of? How do we know when we're clinging in experience, and how do we know when we're identifying? What is that? Is that a process? What qualities does it have? Tejini.
I noticed the clinging. And then the views that came up about China.
Oh, yeah. Right.
And I could see what was happening. And sort of step back to the sort of earlier stage. Yeah, but I could see that the clinging stage was painful.
Okay. So the clinging stage was painful. Yeah. So, with all this, in a way, I'm aware there are a couple more hands. With all this, the aim isn't again to sort of so much get the answer. The aim is to really be able to learn to look into the experience. Who else was there? Somebody over here. Someone who I can't quite see with that. Hi there.
Possibly a sense of volition or will to act.
Yes, that's what I was calling a kind of movement of energy. So we're probably doing quite well at finding the five skandhas, aren't we? So we've got some sense of the body kind of being somehow involved in the process. There's something with Nyanagarbha helped us to find Vedana, feeling. There's the process, there's thinking processes going on sort of on different levels, which help to produce the sense of identification. There's the volitions, and all this is happening in some kind of awareness, which is functioning in terms of some kind of subject and object. Yeah, maybe there's a subtle little bit of our mind with which we were looking at the thoughts. So at that point, the subtle little bit of our mind was the subject, and the thought we were looking at was the object. So it was Padmapala.
No, I was just saying how I came to my views.
Mm-hmm.
When I try not to come to my, I find that painful as well, because it almost identifies me as having some sort of meaning.
Mm.
Perhaps not identification. To be a human seems, that view seems to be quite important.
Yeah. Well, we need to be able to think and construct views about our world. Life would be impossible without it. Yeah, certainly, there's no way 90 of us could all arrange to go and have dinner and over there, you know, unless we had views and could think. And the issue is knowing that the views are views. Rather than, you know, we tend to take views as how things are. Yeah. And we somehow fail to see that, we fail to see that flimsiness of thinking, the flimsiness of that experience, and we take it as real. So, for instance, if we've been practicing meditation for a long time, there's still lots of prapancha. That's because we are still taking the thinking as real, and because of that we're drawn into it, there's a lot of interest in it, and that becomes more interesting than whatever it is that we're meditating on. So what we want is to be able to use views as tools. They're good servants and rotten masters. Yeah? And we just need to know the status of what we're doing. That's my best. Yeah.
There's something about a sense of I that was having these thoughts, but also an I that was separate and thinking itself into being.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah.
It's as nebulous as that. These kind of, I suppose, a sense of I operating on different levels and being a bit pervasive.
Yes, well, it's not easy to pin down, and you can do that thing in meditation where you start looking at the me, and then you're the me that's looking at the me. And you can go into an infinite regress, but please don't go there, because it doesn't help. It really doesn't. Two is the maximum, right? That's all you're allowed. Somebody I was on 3-year retreat with, sort of, as part of our little group, not Vijayamala, I think he ended up with four different me identities at one point, sort of all kind of watching one another. Anyway, so just look into all that, but it's that noticing how that sense of me shifts around and shifts perspective, and all that helps. Melicity?
Not so much of a question, but it's that I'm just having a lot of fun.
Hey, yes, good.
In thinking about China, thinking about myself being my age,
mm-hmm.
I sort of, one of the things that I realized that brought a sense of release was there's nothing, all of these ideas, I had all these ideas about China and about myself, and I saw how they all came from, like, different conditions, like from Telly and my mom, and like I saw the conditions that led to me feeling and thinking in this way, and there was really nothing that I could say was mine. like original. There's nothing so original about my thinking. And there's a sort of sense of, oh, that's good.
Hey.
A sort of sense of relief is like, oh, I actually don't have to. I don't have to be original. And there's also there's this sense of, ah, there's actually nothing in this thinking that is me.
That's all good, yeah. And it's good to play with it. Do you know what I mean? It's all this stuff can become so sort of serious and heavy. And no, you're much better kind of going. Well, you know, let's just go and see. Let's go and find out. Let's have a look. Let's explore. Let's go and play. What, you know? Oh, can I find such and such? Oh, no, I can't. Wow. You know, do it more like that, and you're also better off doing quite a lot of samatha and letting the mind rest, and then from time to time just coming and have another little look at this stuff, you know, have another little look at thinking, or have another look at, yeah, where is the me in all this? Yeah, but yes, you know, be playful, you know, kind of creep up on, like, you ever played Grandmother's Footsteps? You know, kind of creep up on how things are, creep up on that sense of me, yeah, quite sort of lightly, and then it, also you don't disturb it, so you can really kind of see more clearly what's there. Yeah. Yeah, that sense of play is really important in the, and curiosity, they're just really important aspects of the Dharma. Because the reason why everything gets so serious is because we're taking it all as real. You know, once it's real, it's serious and it's heavy. And that's because we're not seeing how kind of flimsy and kind of constructed it all actually is. Yeah. Which is what this kind of work is helping us to do. Yeah. So the more we see all that, then yeah, it does feel more kind of free and easy. Yeah, so we're aiming to see that with the thinking, that the thinking is a construct out of nothing very much. You know, it is mainly kind of smoke and mirrors. Yeah. And the reason why, you know, it you can kind of watch, you know, a little thought sort of, you know, it's like watching. When I lived at Gujaloka, I used to watch clouds forming sometimes, and then there would just be this little kind of tiny kind of puff of something, but then it would gradually start to grow and grow and grow, you know, and then it would sit over Kampana, the sort of mountain up behind Gujaloka. And you can watch that with yourself, you know, it's like something which is hardly anything, because you pay attention to it, because you give it interest, it starts to grow. Yeah. It's like, I often talk about how, you know, it's like in meditation, you know, you're moderately concentrated or absorbed in, let's say, the breathing again. But there are these kind of little doorways, kind of flickering, sort of possible, it's like there's possible worlds that you could go into, you know, so there you are with the breathing, but then there's, after the retreat, sort of pops into the edge of your awareness. But you know, I'm with the breathing. So that doorway kind of closes again, and then, you know, needing to phone someone, you know, pops up, or helping out today with such and such, and it pops up. And if you don't give them any interest, they just pop down again. What else can they do? Yeah, they just. But at a certain point, one of them catches us in some kind of way, and we start turn towards it. And it's like a sort of portal to a world, and we kind of get more and more into it. And if we don't catch ourselves, we kind of go through that doorway, and suddenly we're in, you know, shopping world or internet world or, you know, whatever world we happen to want to go into at that point. And And when we're in it, it feels like, oh, this is sort of real. Yeah. But it's all been, it's like made of very little. But because we've invested energy into it, it grows and grows and grows. Yeah. And the other image which I use a lot is one which comes from someone called Rigzin Shikpo, which is the idea of a sort of director's chair. It's like, you know, anyone not heard this, maybe it's not worth me even going there. Yeah. No. Oh, okay. All right. I don't know, it's just kind of deathly hush. Okay, so imagine you've got a stage with a director's chair, and you know, actors come on and they say their lines, to be or not to be, that is the question, whether to snub room the mind, and they go off, and the next one comes on, and I'm not going to run through my Shakespeare quotes, and goes off, they sort of keep passing through. So the actors are like thoughts, and there's a sense of a self, which is often like the director, you know, sort of sitting here going, no, you know, sorry, I'm meditating, it's, you're not coming on yet, you know, it's not your cue, you know, end of the meditation, go away, get off. So directing the whole thing. But when you look at it, actually what's going on is that this chair of me is actually empty, but one of the actors comes on, and from time to time, rather than walking off, they go and sit in the director's chair and go, okay, no, not you, right, your turn. Yeah. That sense that there's a sort of a fixed director, sort of somehow behind or separate from the stage is something we can look into, because I suggest to you, I put it to you, that it's just, or partly at least, just more thoughts. Yeah. Thoughts which we give a sort of special privileged priority status to. Yeah. Yes, they're in the priority queue rather than the other one. And all this we can sort of investigate for ourselves, you know, don't sort of take it as how things are, but just use, all these things, we just take them as kind of hints and things that we can look at. Is that right? Yeah. So yeah, we're playing and exploring. That clear? Oh, hello.
Can you say something about passion and what happens to passion?
Passion.
Mm. Mm. So presumably the thoughts be passion.
Yeah.
So what will happen to that energy, whether it's passion about a cause or passion about if we stop feeding ourselves, does that mean we lose the passion?
No. Although it may get subtler. One of the ways in which we keep convincing ourselves that we exist and we're here is by making the story of me really kind of melodramatic. Yeah. When there's really, you know, if I'm really angry about this and I'm gutted about that, and, you know, then, you know, that was a sort of huge mistake and so on. All the time that sort of level of feeling is sort of sloshing about, I have a very strong feeling of me here. Yeah. But without that, there's still tremendous feeling. There's all the, yeah, you know, with spiritual death, there's spiritual rebirth. So there's all the passion of Amitabha, Padmasambhava, there's all that great love, there's all that tremendous kind of being prepared to go to the ends of the earth to help living beings. But it's not within a self-referential framework. And very often, as I say, it will get subtler. So there's still none of this is deadening us. This is all bringing us back to life, actually, because when we're operating from a sense of me, we're operating from a sense of alienation from life. Actually, there's always me that's standing apart from the experience, and very often experiencing through several layers of interpretation and sort of filtering concepts. So when those fall away or are seen through, then there's a real aliveness. That's when you really contact your life energy very strongly and directly. Okay. Yeah, so the Dharma is bringing us back to life. Let's finish if we're done. We're done? Yeah. Let's just sit quietly together for a few minutes.